Good afternoon, everyone. This coming week, we have an opportunity to stand out and be separate from the culture around us. This coming Wednesday is the second most popular party day of the year, next year, New Year's, and also be a day in which one-third of American adults will dress up in costumes. Upon which will be spent, if you count those for both children and adults, an estimated $3.2 billion, according to the USA Today newspaper yesterday. Yes, I'm talking about Halloween. Don't worry, that's not the focus of my message today. I told my kids, no, I'm not going to talk about Halloween. I've done that in the past. And just thought I'd give a little timely, encouraging reminder that this week will bring each of us that opportunity to be a modern-day Daniel. Modern-day Daniel. Today, though, I wanted to focus on something completely different and begin by talking about talents. We've heard messages and we've read in the Bible about the importance of developing and using and not neglecting our talents. The Bible, though, also talks about God's people having various or diverse talents or gifts. We don't all have the same talents. Some of us have talents and abilities in areas that others of us don't, which means that in addition to having talents, well, we don't have some talents. We have some liabilities. We have some limitations. We have our strengths, and we have our weaknesses. However, sometimes God's people seem to get hung up about the talents or the skills that they don't have. And sometimes we can be hampered by our perceived limitations. You can turn to Exodus chapter 3, and let's consider Moses, for example. We think of Moses as a great leader and one of the heroes of the Old Testament, and truly he was. But it's interesting to notice how he perceived himself, at least at certain times in his life. In Exodus 3, God is talking to Moses at the burning bush. We'll start in verse 9. And I'm going to read from the ERV. ERV, I'd never heard of that. I found it online, though. The easy-to-read version. I didn't know there was such a thing, but it seemed to be accurate enough here. Verse 9, Exodus 3, verse 9. I have heard the cries of the Israelites, God says, and I have seen the way the Egyptians have made life hard for them. So now I'm sending you, Moses, to Pharaoh. Go, lead my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Verse 11, Moses said to God, I'm not a great man. Or who am I, the New King James Version says. How can I be the one to go to Pharaoh and lead the Israelites out of Egypt? I don't have the skill set for that. God said, you can do it because I'll be with you. This will be the proof that I'm sending you. After you lead the people out of Egypt, you'll come and you'll worship me in this mountain. And then God goes on to explain the message that he wants Moses to carry and deliver. And we'll skip ahead to chapter 4, Exodus 4, verse 1. Then Moses answered and said, but suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you. You know, what credibility am I going to have? So God answers by demonstrating to Moses some miracles where a rod can be changed into a serpent. Moses' hand can be changed to look leprous and then not. And water can be changed to be blood. So God gives Moses some confidence that he'll have some credibility. Skip ahead to verse 10. Then Moses said to the Lord, but Lord, I'm telling you, I am not a good speaker. I have never been able to speak well. I'm not eloquent. And this hasn't changed since you started talking to me, and I'm still not a good speaker. You know that I speak slowly and I don't use the best words. The Lord said to him, who made a person's mouth? Who can make someone deaf or not able to speak? Who can make a person blind? Who can make a person able to see? I am the one. I'm the Lord. So go. I will be with you when you speak. I will give you the words to say. You know, I'll help you. I'll be there. I'll help you to speak effectively. Verse 13. But Moses said, my Lord, I beg you to send someone else, not me. And God was offering here to help Moses overcome his speaking problem, but Moses rejected his help. Verse 14. Then the Lord became angry, probably pretty exasperated with Moses, and said, all right, I'll give you someone to help you. Aaron, the Levite, is your brother, isn't he? He's a good speaker. In fact, Aaron's already coming to meet you, and he'll be happy to see you. I will tell you what to say. Then you will tell Aaron, and I will help him say it well. I will tell both of you what to do. Notice that Moses limited himself and what God could do through him by saying, basically, I'm not skilled enough, I'm not credible enough, then I'm not a good enough speaker. God was not pleased with that. Turn ahead to Numbers 13. We will move forward in time. And Moses at this time is leading the Israelites toward the promised land. And the 12 spies have been sent out to scout it out. Two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, report back that they're this big, strong people already living there. But the land is good. And in Numbers 13, verse 31, we'll read, now back to the New King James Version here. Numbers 13:31. Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. Good, confident attitude. We can do this. But the men who had gone up with him, the other 10 spies, said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than we are. We're not strong enough to do this. Of course, God was very displeased with this sort of attitude, and the Israelites suffered because of it. And they were nearly wiped out. But in the end, God was patient, and he accomplished things through Moses that Moses never could have originally imagined. I'm going to turn to Judges chapter 6. And we'll notice another Bible character who had a limited perception of himself. And this comes at a time when the Midianites were oppressing the people of Israel. Judges 6, and I'm going to start in verse 11. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite. I tried to practice that word ahead of time, but anyway. While his son Gideon, threshed the wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. Verse 12, and the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Gideon said to him, oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles, which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And of course, there was a reason for that. They turned to disobedience and idol worship. God just goes right ahead, though. In verse 14, the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?" So he said to him, "Oh, my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my father's house." In other words, how can you expect much from me? Look at the family I'm from. We're a bunch of nobodies. And even within my family, I'm the least that any would expect to be able to do anything important. Kind of a side note, it's interesting to consider that Gideon thought his family was a liability. Yet some of God's exemplary servants came from what we might consider very dysfunctional families. Joseph, for example, he had a combination of 12 siblings and half-siblings from four different mothers. His brothers plotted to kill him. They changed their plans. They told a huge lie to their father, and they sold Joseph into slavery. Not your typical nuclear family. More of a thermonuclear family. I have to give John Halford credit for that one. He used that once in one of our classes at AC, and I think I got to remember that. Thermonuclear family, yeah. Back to Gideon, though, and Judges 6, verse 16. And the Lord said to him, to Gideon, "Surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man." It'll be as easy for you to do as if you were battling just one person. To summarize what comes next, we see that just like with Moses, Gideon needed some assurances from God. God obliged Gideon with a few miracles to demonstrate that in spite of Gideon's own perceived limitations, God really did intend to use him to do a great work. And of course, Gideon not only went on to tear down an altar to Baal, but he also led a very limited army of only 300 men against multiple thousands of Midianites and completely routed them. As we go through the Bible, God seems to have an example and an answer to counter almost any of our perceived limitations or liabilities. And we've already covered, I'm not skilled enough, I'm not credible enough, I'm not eloquent enough, we're not strong enough, my family's a liability. There's some other perceived limitations we could mention. How about, I'm not young enough anymore, I'm too old. Well, age is not necessarily an issue with God. Well, it's true, the manner in which we serve may change as we age. The importance of our service does not. You can think of all the biblical examples of servants who had important roles in their 80s, 90s, and even into their hundreds. Sarah, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, Daniel. The Apostle John wrote Revelation when he was about 90. Or how about, I'm not old enough. I'm too young. Of course, we think of David. How old was he when he slew Goliath? And of course, Daniel accomplished things at both ends. He was very young and he was very old. 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians verses 26 through 29. We can find an answer to another concern. Ever said, I'm not smart enough. I don't have the necessary intellect. Of course, some of you might already be thinking in your head one of the hymns. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26. For you see your calling, brethren. that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are mighty. And the base things of the world, and the things which are despised, the things the world looks down on, God has chosen. And the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. We can also notice here that sometimes God chooses not to use our talents, but our liabilities instead. Sometimes he uses us because of our liabilities. God doesn't want people to take pride in their talents. And he'll humble prideful people by working through others who, by the world's standards, have perhaps limited abilities. It's not to say, though, that we shouldn't try to overcome our liabilities. Sometimes it depends. Sometimes our weaknesses, our liabilities are just things that we have to accept, and we do the best we can in spite of them. I accept the fact that musically, I don't have a real good ear for pitch, and I'm not going to be the musician that some of the rest of you are. I still try during hymn service, though. So a lot of us, we focus more of our time on and energy in different directions. We focus on our talents sometimes. We try to improve those. We focus on things where we feel like we can easily maybe serve more effectively and efficiently. One of our kids took an aptitude test a few years back and showed a low skill level in fine motor manual dexterity. And the counselor told our child, basically, don't waste your time. If you had ever had any desire to be a brain surgeon, you're not going to do it. You got a different skill set, and to work on those skills. And that child did, and quite successfully. However, when it comes to other types of weaknesses or liabilities, you could think of smoking or alcoholism or addictive behaviors, then we probably should put considerable time and effort into overcoming that particular liability. Sometimes, though, a particular weakness may not necessarily be a bad or a sinful behavior, but it could still be something that holds us back. And it might be worth our time to try to overcome it and deal with it. Almost 20 years ago, I met two very shy, quiet, petite little ninth grade girls, one of whom is at least partially responsible for inspiring this message. I met them when they entered a first-year algebra class that I was teaching at the time. I'll call them Leanne and Stacy. They appeared to be good friends. They seemed a little insecure and perhaps relied on each other as sort of a support system. Other teachers noticed the same thing, and when I was comparing notes with these other teachers, it appeared that the girls had even planned their schedules so that they could always be together in their classes throughout the day. And I think they had all their classes together, not only that year, but just about all the way through high school. They're very nice girls, but the algebra class that they were in and the one that I was teaching had some rowdy students that I didn't have complete control over. Normally with high school freshmen, I'd make out a seating chart kind of to deal with that sort of thing and do it either alphabetically or randomly, and I'd try to get the students who are friends to sit away from each other so they wouldn't be tempted to talk and then get tempted to go further into rowdiness. don't remember the exact circumstances, but I'd done this with this class, and I can't remember if the two girls came to me or if I'd noticed something or I felt sorry for them, but I did change the seating chart, and I let them sit next to each other just because, yeah, there were a lot of rowdy kids in the class. And, maybe they need a little, maybe they need their little support system. So I let them. I didn't think either of them thought of algebra as their favorite subject or the subject that they were particularly talented at, but they were hardworking, they were conscientious, they did well. And by the end of the year, one of them, Stacy, was one of my top students in the class. She'd gotten an A. And 2 years later, I had both of them again, only this time it was in a second-year algebra class. And again, they still seemed quite shy and hardly ever spoke up in class. And they continued to be hardworking and conscientious, and they did well. And with Stacy, who was again one of my top students. Next year, senior year, I didn't have them in the class, but the two of them would occasionally come in and visit with me after school. They'd always come in together. At one point I asked, so what plans do you have for the future? If I remember correctly, Leanne wanted to be a music teacher, give music lessons, and she did happen to be an excellent musician. She had won some sort of statewide competition playing the alto saxophone, I remember. Stacy talked about becoming an elementary school teacher. And I thought, well, yes, I guess I could see that, but you'll have to develop a little more confidence and assertiveness. They both went off to college, and Western Oregon, Monmouth, and they'd come back periodically, maybe once a year, and visit at the school, and they'd visit with me and some of the other teachers and kind of update us on their progress. Eventually, they finished college and began living more separate lives. Leanne got married and worked a little as an assistant to a band teacher, then had a baby, and last I heard was living in the Eugene area. Stacy actually got a job as an elementary school teacher in Salem. So we were able to stay in contact via the school district email. About once a year, we'd check up on each other. And it was interesting to follow her progress. After a year or two of teaching, she decided to take some summer college classes in educational administration. Wow, administration, that kind of surprised me. She continued teaching, but eventually completed the program for her administrative certificate and then got a job as an instructional coach, meaning that, like Ben Light was, she helped train and mentor other teachers. I thought, wow, how about that? Bigger surprise came a year later when she was hired to be a vice principal at a Salem middle school. I thought, wow, that'd be a challenge for anybody. That'd be kind of intimidating for me. But she must have been good at it, because I was further surprised a year later when I read in the newspaper she was selected to be the principal of a Salem school district school. I thought, wow, from that shy, timid little student to principal. The point of the story being that she exceeded expectations, or at least my expectations. She really broke out of her comfort zone and overcame any insecurities or liabilities she may have had. She did not limit herself in what she wanted to accomplish. I was kind of inspired by that. Just a little follow-up, though. I don't think she's currently acting principal at the school. A little over a year ago, last summer, she informed me that she got married. And then last spring, she told me that I'm expecting a baby in late October, which could be any day now, or maybe she's already had the baby. I'm not sure. I suspect that she probably won't go back to school for a while. She seemed to have the type of person kind of had her priorities straight, like there's a time to stay home and be a mom, and there's a separate time to pursue other interests. I do want to go on to one other aspect here. and go into it with a question. What do we do when we're thrust into a situation that we truly don't have the talent or skills for? You can begin turning to 1 Kings 3. Do we respond like Moses? Well, who am I to do this? I don't have the skills. Nobody's going to listen to me. Can't even talk straight. Please, God, get somebody else to do it. Or, let's notice a different example. Let's notice Solomon's attitude and his response. 1 Kings 3, verse 5. This time Solomon has recently been established as king of Israel. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask, what shall I give you?" And Solomon said, "You've shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am as a little child. I feel totally inadequate. I do not know how to go out or come in. I don't know where to begin here. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted." This is a huge responsibility. Verse 9. "Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. Help me to have the wisdom to make good decisions," he's saying. "For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" Solomon needed a skill set that he did not have at this time. Verse 10. "The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, 'Because you have asked this thing and have not asked for long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor asked the life of your enemies, and have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So if you walk in my ways, if you keep my statutes, my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days." Solomon responded to the situation by praying for God's help in a dream. And because he had the right attitude, he got even more than he asked for. Of course, we don't have to wait for a dream to pray and ask for God's help. Brethren, to summarize what we've covered here today, we've seen that when God has a job for us to do, he can easily compensate for any and all shortcomings we may see in ourselves. We serve God who knows no limits. And he knows what's best for us. Let's be careful not to use the shortcomings or weaknesses that we see in ourselves to limit the things that we can accomplish. When we submit to God and we have faith that he's there with us, God can and will use us and has plans for us far beyond what we could ever imagine. Don't have to turn there. I'm going to refer to 1 Corinthians 2, 9 and 10. "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has it entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him." When we have God's blessing in an endeavor, there's no limit to what God can accomplish through us. So let's not limit ourselves.